This is Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Lester Graham. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has released a long-anticipated study on ways to prevent Asian carp from spreading from the Mississippi River system to the Great Lakes through a man-made canal at Chicago. Joining me to talk about the carp and the plan is Tammy Newcomb. She's a senior water policy advisor for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. Before we start talking about this plan, let's back up and talk about why this is a problem. There are four species of these Asian carp: silver carp, bighead carp, grass carp, and the black carp. A lot of us have seen the videos of carp jumping out of the water as a motorboat goes down the river. So which of these carp does that?
It can be very confusing, but I just tell everybody to take a deep breath. We always talk about different species of trout all the time, and so carp are not unlike that. There's four different species of Asian carp that are here stateside. One of them we'll talk about first is called the grass carp, and the grass carp eats vegetation, and they pose a lot of threat to wetlands and emergent vegetation. They've been prohibited in Michigan since the 60s. In 2012, USGS found some reproducing. The ones that are around are supposed to be sterile from the other locations, but the USGS, the Geological Survey, found some reproducing grass carp in the Sandusky River in Ohio. And so immediately Ohio and Michigan started talking, and we've been working on that problem and developing a plan to address those grass carp. But again, grass carp have been around for more than 30 years in the Great Lakes, and they have not exhibited the explosive types of invasive properties that some of these other carp have. So that's grass carp. We'll put that off to the side. The other three species are the black carp, the bighead carp, and the silver carp. Black carp are different from the bighead and silver and grass carp in that they eat snails and mussels. And so, as you can imagine, their diet is unlimited here in the Great Lakes, but that's not a good thing because when they eat them, they would convert them to things that are not helpful to our Great Lakes. But black carp right now are about 150 miles from the Great Lakes, and they're yet another one that we have watched come up the Mississippi River.
Now, that one was brought in by catfish farmers, is that right?
So yes, that was brought in for aquaculture to eat snails in their aquaculture ponds, and they, once again with flooding, got introduced into the Mississippi River from flooding events where farmers' ponds got overtopped and then these fish went out into the Mississippi.
Okay, now we're at silver and bighead.
Now we're down to silver and bighead, and those are the two of the day. Those are the two that we talk about as being an imminent threat to the Great Lakes. And the first thing that I want to say is that there have been people who have said, oh, they won't do anything in the Great Lakes because it's too cold. Well, that absolutely is not true. Oh, they won't populate the Great Lakes because they're lakes. Well, guess what? These guys have been motoring through up the Mississippi, the Missouri, the Ohio rivers with no abandon, and they're a lake species. So they've been doing just fine in rivers. Imagine what they will do when they get into the preferred environment of lakes.
So these are not riverine fish. They don't prefer rivers.
They prefer to spend their days in lowland backwaters without a lot of current. They do need rivers to spawn, and that will keep their eggs suspended, but they actually prefer environments without river currents in them. And that's why when Illinois will talk about them, or some of the other researchers will talk about them, they'll say they're in these backwater areas in abundance, or they're in these off-channel areas. But the reality is, in the rivers, their abundances become so high that you just see them everywhere.
Is this damage that we're concerned about to the Great Lakes or to the rivers that flow into the Great Lakes?
Well, exactly. So these fish are going to be where these phytoplankton and then zooplankton, which are the small animals in the water column.
Sure, it's the food base for all the fish.
It's the food base for everything. We can think about it like grass for sheep, right? It's the lawn that's out there that the fish can take advantage of. In the case of the Great Lakes, a lot of our small fish really rely on that early food base for their early life histories to survive. And the other thing that we've learned from another invader called the alewife is that the fish that feed in the water column like that really do a number on our larval fish. So they can eat the larval fish, prey on the larval fish, before we ever get a chance to even record them. And we've seen the effect of alewife in, like, Saginaw Bay on walleye and perch. And after alewife were gone, we fully saw all of a sudden all of this natural reproduction occurring. And it's because those fish were not preying, the alewife were not preying on the walleye and perch. So back to bighead and silver carp, that's exactly what we're worried about with bighead and silver carp. There may not be a ton of them out in the open waters of the Great Lakes, but our nearshore areas and our places like the Drowned River mouth in Muskegon, Saginaw Bay, any of those nearshore areas that have the energy content that these fish need, that phytoplankton and those zooplankton, that's where they'll be. They'll also be in our rivers. They will also be in our inland lakes. And so that is why we are so afraid of these fish getting in. People say, well, we can just have predators eat them, right? Well, the problem with that is these fish can grow so fast that within a very short time frame, less than a year, they're too big for most of our predators to even eat.
So let's talk about what's been done to stop these fish from getting into the Great Lakes. Now, there was an electric barrier built in this man-made channel originally to prevent the invasive round goby, which had invaded the Great Lakes, from spreading to the Mississippi River system. That didn't work, so it was rebranded as a carp barrier working in the opposite direction. Another improved electric barrier was built to stop carp from swimming into the Great Lakes. Why is that not enough?
So the electric barrier system, it's actually a system of three electric barriers that was the pilot barrier, and then there was a 2A and 2B barriers. And the idea there is that one barrier can be turned off and maintained while the other is still left on. The first barrier, the pilot barrier, is now also being replaced. But the issue with those electric barriers, even now, is still that when a barge goes through, it sort of sucks all the electricity out of the water. If you think about the electrical current through the water as a fence, if you will, it changes and puts holes in that fence, which allows for there to be what we call a shadow effect from the barge moving through. So there's actually places where the fish can get through under that system. And then also the other issue is that we know fish can get entrained in between the spaces between the barges. So if you think of the prow front of a boat hooking up to a flat end back of another barge, there's a space in there, the void spaces they're called, that small fish have been shown to be able to be entrained or in there and move through without being affected by that electric barrier.
So why can't we just shut down this man-made channel linking the Mississippi River system to Lake Michigan?
So that's a very good question, and one that many still question today. Physical separation is a place that would allow us the greatest certainty to protect the Great Lakes. But there is a number of businesses and then the barge operators, not our ship-going vessels, but barge operators that operate within the Chicago area waterway that haul aggregate, they haul chemicals, they haul grains. And so there's still a commercial market for those commodities to be transversed through this system.
Yeah, is any of that cargo so valuable that it's worth risking all the fishing in the Great Lakes?
Well, I think it depends on which side of the boundary you're sitting on.
And whether you own a barge company or not, I suppose. So let's talk about this new study by the Army Corps of Engineers. It suggests, what does it suggest we should do to block the Asian carp from the Great Lakes?
The Brandon Road study that just came out shows a tentatively selected plan where at this Brandon Road lock and dam, there's a pinch point in the river, and it's a great place because the approach channel to the lock is very long and narrow, and then the water, the remaining water, just flows over High Head Dam. And so at this location, no matter what solution is implemented there, it's not going to flood downtown Chicago because the water, again, can just pass over the dam, but nothing can get upstream past there. So in this dam and then the lock chamber itself, this approach to the lock gives us an opportunity to really reduce the risk because we're simply reducing the amount of area that you have to put these control measures in. And so this study that we finally get to talk about is talking about an electrical design. I think there's some ways that we can think about it to improve the electrical design that's currently out there, as well as things like complex sound, which we know can deter fish, and then there's some water jet features to it as well to try and flush fish out of those entrained areas.
So where is this lock and dam in relation to the series of electric barriers already in place? And keep in mind, when you say upstream, downstream, water flows out of Lake Michigan down this channel and into the Illinois River eventually, right?
Right. So if you're coming into the Chicago River out of Lake Michigan, you're going to go 37 miles downstream before you encounter the first set of electric barriers. You'll travel a little bit further, about 4 to 6 miles, and you'll encounter the Lockport Lock and Dam. And then you're going to go another 4 to 6 miles, and you're going to get to the Brandon Road Lock and Dam. So the Brandon Road Lock and Dam structure is about 10 to 12, depending on how you measure it, miles downstream from the current electric barrier system. When I look at it, when we look at it from a risk reduction perspective, anything that we can do, and it's why Michigan has been a proponent of doing something at Brandon Road, anything that we can do there to reduce the risk first and foremost gives us an opportunity between Brandon Road Lock and Dam and that current electric barrier system to fix any mistakes, you know, to take care of any fish that may get through the first barrier, if you will.
So what's the Michigan Department of Natural Resources response to this plan?
So right now, we are very pleased to see the plan released. It gives us a start to the dialogue about how to protect the Great Lakes. So our response is we're eager to talk about the conversation, about the plans that are out there, to talk about how we proceed into the next steps beyond this point.
Final question. Environmental groups are urging quick action to start construction on these barriers. What's the timeline for approving this study and getting something done?
Right now it is a dialogue, and I believe we have 45 days to provide comments. So the Army Corps will take in that comment, and then it will be up to the Army Corps of Engineers to provide any further tweaks to the plan as it is, and then present the plan forward through their process. And then after that, it's a congressional action. So I can't put a direct timeline on it for you, but there's a process out there, and it's very important that people make their opinions known as it pertains to protecting the Great Lakes.
So besides public comment, will the state have input during this period as well?
Yes, we will be making active input with the Army Corps of Engineers. And we have worked closely with the Corps of Engineers. I will say that I'm very pleased in this part of the Glimmerus report that it does better reflect some of the things that are so sacred to us in the Great Lakes, reflecting that boating industry, reflecting the fishery, some of the things that the first Glimmerus report several years ago did not contain. I do think that it gives protecting the Great Lakes more of a narrative in this report.
Okay, that's Tammy Newcomb. She's Senior Water Policy Advisor for the Department of Natural Resources. We've been talking about a new study to block the Asian carp from invading the Great Lakes. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.